Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. Today we're up to Book 15, Chapter 16, which goes like this. "She has come to stay with me," said Princess Mary. "The Count and Countess will be here in a few days. The Countess is in a dreadful state, but it was necessary for Natasha herself to see a doctor. They insisted on her coming with me." "Yes, is there a family free from sorrow now?" said Pierre, addressing Natasha. "You know, it happened the very day we were rescued. I saw him. What a delightful boy he was." Natasha looked at him, and by way of answer to his words, her eyes widened and lit up. "What can one say or think of as consolation?" said Pierre. "Nothing. Why had such a splendid boy, so full of life, to die?" "Yes, in these days it would be hard to live without faith," remarked Princess Mary. "Yes, yes, that is really true," Pierre hastily interrupted her. "Why is it true?" Natasha asked, looking attentively into Pierre's eyes. "How can you ask why?" said Princess Mary. "The thought alone of what awaits." Natasha, without waiting for Princess Mary to finish, again looked inquiringly at Pierre. "And because," Pierre continued, "only one who believes that there is a God ruling us can bear a loss such as hers and yours." Natasha had already opened her mouth to speak, but suddenly stopped. Pierre hurriedly turned away from her and again addressed Princess Mary, asking her about his friend's last days. Pierre's confusion had now almost vanished, but at the same time he felt that his freedom had also completely gone. He felt that there was now a judge of his every word and action, whose judgment mattered more to him than that of all the rest of the world. As he spoke now, he was considering what impression his words would make on Natasha. He did not purposely say things to please her, but whatever he was saying, he regarded from her standpoint. Princess Mary reluctantly, as usual in such cases, began telling of the condition in which she had found Prince Andrew. But Pierre's face, quivering with emotion, his questions and his eager, restless expression gradually compelled her to go into details which she feared to recall for her own sake. "Yes, yes, and so," Pierre kept saying, as he leant towards her with his whole body and eagerly listened to her story. "Yes, yes, so he grew tranquil and softened. He had always sought one thing with his whole soul, to be perfectly good, so he could not be afraid of death. The faults he had, if he had any, were not of his making, so he did soften. What a happy thing that he saw you again," he added, suddenly turning to Natasha and looking at her with his eyes full of tears. Natasha's face twitched. She frowned and lowered her eyes for a moment. She hesitated for an instant whether to speak or not. "Yes, that was a happiness," she then said in her quiet voice with its deep chest notes. "For me it certainly was a happiness." She paused, "and he said he was wishing for it at the very moment I entered the room." Natasha's voice broke. She blushed, pressed her clasped hands on her knees, and then, controlling herself with an evident effort, lifted her head and began to speak rapidly. "We knew nothing of it when we started for Moscow. I did not dare to ask about him. Then suddenly Sonya told me he was travelling with us. I had no idea and could not imagine what state he was in. All I wanted was to see him and be with him," she said, trembling and breathing quickly. And not letting them interrupt her, she went on to tell what she had never yet mentioned to anyone, all she had lived through during those 3 weeks of their journey and life at Yaroslavl. Pierre listened to her with lips parted and eyes fixed upon her, full of tears. As he listened, he did not think of Prince Andrew, nor of death, nor of what she was telling. He listened to her and felt only pity for her, for what she was suffering now while she was speaking. Princess Mary, frowning in her effort to hold back her tears, sat beside Natasha and heard, for the very first time, the story of those last days of her brother's and Natasha's love. Evidently, Natasha needed to tell that painful, yet joyful, tale. She spoke, mingling most trifling details with the intimate secrets of her soul, and it seemed as if she could never finish. Several times over she repeated the same thing twice. DeSilas's voice was heard outside the door, asking whether little Nicholas might come in to say goodnight. "Well, that's all, everything," said Natasha. She got up quickly just as Nicholas entered, almost ran to the door, which was hidden by curtains, struck her head against it, and rushed from the room with a moan either of pain or sorrow. Pierre gazed at the door through which she had disappeared and did not understand why he suddenly felt all alone in the world. Princess Mary roused him from his abstraction by drawing his attention to her nephew, who had entered the room. At that moment of emotional tenderness, little Nicholas's face, which resembled his father's, affected Pierre so much that when he had kissed the boy, he got up quickly, took out his handkerchief, and went to the window. He wished to take leave of Princess Mary, but she would not let him go. "No, Natasha and I sometimes don't go to sleep till after 2, so please don't go. I will order supper. Go downstairs. We will come immediately." Before Pierre left the room, Princess Mary told him, "This is the first time she has talked of him like that." All right, there we go. Another chapter down. And hey, Natasha has opened up a little bit and shared her feelings about the loss of her brother and of her, not her husband, but her love and her once fiancé. It's not entirely evident why that's happened, but it could be something to do with, well, it's one of two things, or maybe it's a bit of both of these things, but we know that Pierre has recently become a much better listener. And that can be a very good thing for someone who's grieving and mourning. So perhaps the reason Natasha has opened up to him so willingly is just because he has been such a good listener. The other reason is we do know that there's a bit of a spark of romance in their history. So perhaps she's just very warm to him. And I'm not sure if she considers him a friend or a romantic interest or what, but she's definitely friendly towards him, so that's probably helped her open up a little bit as well. She kind of trusts him. She's had a few moments in the book so far where she's sort of confided in Pierre or told Pierre about her feelings, so maybe that's just something she's comfortable doing. Either way, that's a good thing for Natasha. Pierre said some really nice things too. He said that thing about faith. You know, he doesn't speak that much about sort of Christian faith, but he says that, something about how if you didn't have faith in a moment like this, it would be a terrible thing, because believing that there's a heaven is really the only way that you can come through such a tragedy. It was something along those lines. But it was just a nice thing. It was like saying, what you're grieving right now, Natasha, and Mary too, is so awful that if you didn't believe in God, it would be unbearable. Whether or not you do believe in God, it's just a really nice way for someone to sympathize with you. Chattel Valster said, "Even though Pierre feels that all his former freedom has vanished, he still contains the ability to make people open up to him." This is seen by Natasha opening up to him, which was evidently necessary for her, as Tolstoy says. Will Pierre unconsciously be able to help Countess Rostov, too, with her mourning? Old Lady Rostov, I think she's going to be a harder person to console, perhaps because she's lost her son, Though I think there was this dynamic between Natasha and her mother where Natasha was made stronger and brought out of her, well, I'm not going to say brought out of her depression, but brought back to life to some degree by the task of consoling her mother. She was doing a really good job of that. So maybe Pierre helping Natasha will also inadvertently help Countess Rostov because, well, it'll enable Natasha to do an even better job of what she was already doing. Combine that with Pierre's help too. But, you know, I just don't think that your youngest child, your son, being killed is just anything that you're going to even sort of want to get past. Countess Rostov's probably not ever going to be the same. Chatelvalster also said, as Maya tried to direct Pierre's attention to Natasha in the last chapter, in this chapter she tries to make him stay. Is Maya trying to connect Natasha and Pierre with each other, or is the last example an indication that Maya is glad of Pierre's company? Probably a little bit of both. I think she knows that they were friends. She might not know that there was any kind of romantic inklings between them, but she knows they were friends, so that's going to be good for Natasha. And she knows Pierre was Prince Andrei's friend as well. So it's going to be good for him. It's a good place for him to be, to get a bit of closure around the death of his friend. I think Maya just sees that altogether it's a good thing for the both of them, for everyone involved, for Pierre to be there. It's the right place for him to be at the moment. I doubt that she's trying to do any matchmaking. I don't think that that's what's going on. I mean, this was her brother's love, you know, her brother's fiance at one point, so yeah, I don't think that's really what she's up to. Reddit user 100157 said, MFW, my face when Natasha hit her head on the door. Come on, Leo, you didn't have any banana peels? It was a kind of a strange little moment, really, wasn't it? Like, that detail. Those are the little details in a book that when I read them, I think the author must have just seen that happen recently, and that's why it's included. Because it's just an odd little detail to add. Either that or it just occurred to him randomly and he said, oh yeah, okay, make her bop her head on the way out. Is there any deeper meaning to why that happened? I don't think so. But, I don't know, that struck me as, that was the kind of detail I would probably edit out of my own work. There's these moments in my novels where I've added little details like that and people pick up on them. They say they're kind of jarring. Like in the middle of the narrative of one of them, one of the characters watching the countryside drift by notices a fox hopping from behind a log in sort of a wooded forest area. And that little detail I thought was a nice little detail when I wrote it. But a few people have said, like, that one sentence in the whole book just was kind of jarring. Like, why did you just add this one detail about a fox jumping out from a log? And for me, it was just like a little bit of resolution, you know, high resolution, or a little bit of detail, a little bit of colour to add to the page, just to paint a picture for the reader. But hey, these are the kinds of things that kind of jab out of a text, and people take note. So I don't know what your face was, 100157, but yeah, I feel you. That sentence did kind of come off even a little bit silly. Alright, I'll mention before we end this one that reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist is picking up a bit of steam. Slowly, slowly, slowly. And get a couple of members and a couple more, and we're up to 25 subscribers on the new subreddit, which is a lot considering that the subreddit is not really alive yet. It's just a holding zone for when we start the next project at the start of next year. But I will remind you all, go and jump on there, subscribe. The more of us that are there ready to undertake this next chapter of the podcast, I suppose the better the conversations will be when we kick off. I think what we're going to do is we'll wrap up the podcast. I think the way it'll time out, the last episode, the last chapter will be read on around the 2nd of January, maybe the 3rd. That's just about the way that we timed it out, because the podcast does lag a few days behind the subreddit. But I'm not sure if there's exactly 365 chapters. I think there might be a few less. So I'm not sure what day it's going to end on. Anyway, it'll be around New Year's. And then we'll probably have an episode where we just discuss the book, right? A kind of a debrief session about the book. Then I'm not sure what else we'll do there, but I think what we'll do next is a short story from Hemingway's list. There were two short stories on the list, and that's just a good thing to do. First of all, to test the new forum, the new subreddit, put some thought into exactly how it's going to work. Not that there's really anything that needs to be tested, but it's always good to do a little trial run. I guess you could say this whole year has been 365 trial runs, but anyway, we'll do a short story just to tide us over, and then we're going to kick off with the next novel, which will be from Hemingway's list. Which one is not 100% decided yet, but I think it might be Dubliners, James Joyce, or Madame Bovary by Gustave Flaubert. Those are the two that are sort of, they seem to be the most popular in the voting polls. There actually is, on the A Year of War and Peace subreddit, there is a post that's actually pinned to the top. It says Monday weekly discussion and next year's book decision week. So I think in the last month or so, there's a poll that's in that link, by the way, to vote on which book to read next. In the next month or so, I think that we're going to be seeing that poll a fair bit in the subreddit. So if you want to, please jump on there, or you can contact me through the subreddit, or however you want. But yeah, just let me know what you reckon we should do next, because this whole thing is a big collaboration. So your vote counts. All right, I think that'll do it for today. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.